Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to FilmBookCast, the official podcast of FilmBook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is a man who is going to have to suffer through my amazing Jurassic Park jokes for the next hour. It's Mike DiCriscio. How you doing, Mike?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Are you ready to get down and review Jurassic World?
Yes, this is going to be a good one, I think.
Yes. Now, if you've never listened to an episode of FilmBookCast before, essentially we begin by talking about some film news and then move on into our discussion segment of the show, in which Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. And then finally, we will move on into our featured review. This week, we're reviewing Jurassic World, the latest film from director Colin Trevorrow and the fourth film in the Jurassic Park franchise, and also a movie that made all of the money this weekend. Have you been following how much money Jurassic World has made, Mike?
Yeah, I think I just saw today that they broke the record of, like, all time, ever.
Yeah, biggest opening weekend ever. Over $500 million worldwide. Over $200 million domestically. It made, to give you some context, Jurassic Park 3 made about $300 million in its entire run.
Wow.
And this movie made $200 million more than that in its opening weekend.
In its first weekend.
Yeah.
That's insane.
In, like, 3 days.
Jesus. They spared no expense.
Boom.
That's one.
There you go. All right. So before we get into our Jurassic World review, let's kick off the show with some film news. So, Mike.
Yes.
There was some big film news in the last 2 weeks that we should get to. I think the biggest news of all, the one piece of news to rule them all, is...
is it going to rock my world?
Oh, good one. The Rock is going to star in a remake of Big Trouble in Little China, the John Carpenter movie. So, I mean, Mike, what do you think about that?
Do we need this, though? that's my response.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I mean, like, that original movie is such a unique and profoundly silly movie.
Yeah.
And it's such, and John Carpenter's personality shines through, like, that entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's weird, because I think The Rock is actually, like, if they're going to remake Big Trouble in Little China, like, The Rock is probably the person to be in it.
That's a good point, yeah. I think he could pull off that, like, in Pain and Gain, that, like, silly action
thing. Yeah, and The Rock is awesome, and he's basically, like, our modern-day iteration of Kurt Russell anyway.
Yeah,
so,
pretty much.
So, you know, it's not the worst idea to have him be in it. But everyone's wondering, like, why does this even have to happen? Like, why does this even exist? And my fear is that it turns out like the RoboCop or Total Recall remakes, where they're just like slick modern updates that lose all of the original's like charm. Like the cheesiness is part. The cheesiness of Big Trouble in Little China is like the point.
Yeah, exactly. have they announced anything else about it? Like, who's directing or anything?
No, nothing like that. The Rock has actually said that he wants John Carpenter to be involved in some capacity.
That'd be awesome.
Whether that is, like, a producing role or whatever. And John Carpenter seems to not care that this movie's being made at all. he posted something on Facebook saying, like, yeah, they're going to remake Big Trouble in Little China. It's whatever.
He's just playing video games now. He doesn't care.
Yeah, John Carpenter's, like, a huge video game enthusiast. Which is cool. And yeah, so he doesn't seem like he gives a shit about this whole about this whole enterprise. But I think he said, like, if they paid him, like...
He would do it.
He might, like, do it, so...
I would feel much safer about it, or, like, less worried if he was involved in some capacity. But I guess that's cool if he's not. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, John Carpenter hasn't made a movie in a long time. The last movie he made was The Ward back in 2010. Before that, I think, was Ghosts of Mars in 2001.
Wow.
Neither of those movies are very good. So,
yeah.
So, you know, it's been a while since John Carpenter's made a really good movie. Although he's one of the best directors of the 80s, 70s and 80s. Like,
and that's what makes his movies so awesome, is that they are a 70s and 80s movie.
Yeah. That's true.
Which is the worrisome part of bringing this movie to the modern day.
Yeah, I can't even picture what Big Trouble in Little China would look like outside of its time period. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's such an 80s movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I don't think it can exist in the modern day, but you know what?
They're going to try.
They're going to try. So I guess we'll see.
Yep.
But speaking of The Rock, let's move on to our next film news segment. Because James Wan, who is the director of Furious 7, which starred The Rock.
Oh.
So, there you go.
What a segue.
Is officially on board to direct Aquaman for Warner Brothers. So, I'm really excited about this. Mike, I don't know about you.
Yeah, I always, you know, before Furious 7, I knew James Wan as the horror director.
Right.
And now I think he can handle a big-budget action movie after Furious 7 and do it beautifully. So I'm excited for this now.
Yeah, I thought Furious 7 was my favorite of those movies, and a lot of that was because of James Wan. Like, his style was just so awesome and a lot of fun to watch. And so I think he's a great fit for Aquaman. I'm looking more forward to an Aquaman movie than I ever thought I would.
Aquaman's notoriously the other superhero.
Yeah, exactly. He's the one that everybody makes fun of. So this could be, like, the movie that, like, makes Aquaman cool to to an audience. I'm a little disappointed that he's not directing the next 10 Fast and Furious movies.
Oh, man. He can alternate between superhero movies and Fast and Furious movies.
And that's his entire life.
That's it. And he will have more money than anyone ever in history.
Yes. So I just wanted to mention that briefly. Another piece of big film news that came out this past week. David McCode, who's a cool indie director, he directed movies like Animal Kingdom and The Rover, is directing a new movie called War Machine, which is going to star Brad Pitt. Here's the thing. This movie will not be playing in theaters. It will be premiering exclusively on Netflix.
Wow.
Yes.
That's crazy. They're not going to distribute to theaters at all?
I don't think so. I think what I read was that Netflix may play it in theaters briefly for, like, an Oscar qualifying run. Because in order to be nominated for Oscars, you have to play, like, in at least one theater or something. Like, they have odd rules about that whole thing. But this is, I mean, Brad Pitt, one of the biggest stars in the world, in a movie that's premiering on a computer instead of in theaters. That's a huge win for Netflix. And we've talked in the past about Netflix, like, nabbing up some big names to premiere their stuff through there. Like, they have their deal with Adam Sandler,
right?
Who's making, like, 4 movies for them. They have a deal with the Duplass brothers.
The Wachowskis just premiered their show.
Yes, the Wachowskis just made a TV show for Netflix. So it's a lot of big, like, cinematic people who could normally get stuff in theaters, but are choosing to go through streaming, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited. That's that. Hopefully, as I've always said, this might usher a new wave of streaming content. So hopefully that happens.
Yeah, I think I'm reminded of a few years ago. I think it was around the time The Lone Ranger came out. It was a few years ago. Steven Spielberg and George Lucas were talking, and they said something about how, like, the film industry was about to, like, collapse in on itself.
Yes, I remember this, actually.
Yeah, and how, like, the theatrical experience is just going to get bigger and bigger, and that would push out smaller and smaller movies.
Right.
And so this is a way for the smaller movies to, you know, fight back a little bit.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think their whole point was if you could be in your home and have 7.1 surround sound and a 4K television, why would you need to go anywhere?
Right,
and
exactly.
The theater experience would be reserved for things, you know, or akin to, like, a Broadway theater where you would go, like, as a family outing or, like, a night out.
Yeah,
see a movie.
Yeah, I don't see it being as, like, as big of an event as a Broadway show. Like, I feel like movies and theaters will still, you know, be normal movie-going theaters. But I feel like the types of movies that we'll see in theaters as opposed to, you know, on streaming. We're going to see a lot more Jurassic Worlds is probably what that's going to be.
Yeah, which is a sad feature for me.
Well, I'm not saying they will be as good or bad as Jurassic World because we haven't reviewed it yet.
That's right.
But
like, that style of movie.
That type of movie, the giant blockbuster movies, that'll be, like, all that's playing in theaters, whereas you can find, like, the cool, smaller indie stuff on your streaming. Not even indie stuff, but just, like, mid-budget studio features could probably be there too.
I guess I'm okay with that. That would be cool.
All right, and finally, last piece of film news. John Bernthal, who played Shane on The Walking Dead and has popped up in several movies, you know, over the course of the last few years, like The Wolf of Wall Street and Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, has been cast as the Punisher on Daredevil season 2. Mike, I know you're a big fan of Daredevil season 1.
Yes.
So what's your take on this news?
This is the best thing ever. for some reason, the Punisher is like one of my favorite Marvel characters also.
Yeah.
So I'm just excited that he's being included in the cinematic universe that they're building. And the fact, Daredevil season 2, then they have AKA Jessica Jones. Well,
Jessica Jones coming out first.
Oh, okay, right.
That's in like December, like before the end of the year. That's supposed to come out.
Right. Well, they're doing this Defenders series on Netflix, and I think this is going to be awesome to have the Punisher in there as well.
Yes, I just finished Daredevil season 1. I wasn't as crazy about it as you were.
Okay.
I think the show is pretty good. I think Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk is amazing.
Yes, he's definitely the best part.
Yeah,
or one of the best parts.
But I felt like the entire season as a whole, I felt dragged a lot, and every episode kind of ran like 5 or 10 minutes too long. That said, John Bernthal as the Punisher, incredible casting.
Yeah,
I think that's like a great choice to play him. And I think that's already much more exciting than a lot of Daredevil season 1. So.
Well, what did you think of Charlie Cox as Matt Murdock?
/
Daredevil.
I liked him. You know, I liked him as Matt Murdock. I thought he was pretty good. I thought Daredevil, like when he was in costume, was really boring. The fights were cool. Like the fight scenes were well choreographed and all that.
I think that's what did it for me, was that it was like it had the grimdark that I needed.
Right. But I guess it's not that much of a spoiler because you already have known this already. But Daredevil gets into his his real costume at the end of the series,
right?
And it's a really silly looking costume.
I mean, it is in general.
But I was much more enthralled by him fighting in that costume than I was in him fighting in the black mask.
Right.
So, and that felt like that was the Daredevil show I wanted to see, and that I hadn't been getting for 12 episodes.
So. Right, but now he'll have it with the Punisher.
Now he'll have that costume. The Punisher will be in there. So I think season 2 of Daredevil is looking up for me. I'm pretty excited about it.
Hopefully.
In any case, that is our film news segment for the episode. So why don't we get into our discussions?
All right, let's do it.
All right, Mike, what do you have for your discussions?
So I talked about that Dungeons and Dragons show, Critical Role, which is produced. Or whatever, by Geek and Sundry.
Right.
And that's Felicia Day and Will Wheaton's YouTube production company. But they just launched or premiered a new show with Will Wheaton in it called Titan's Grave, Ashes of Volcana. And it's a RPG version of his tabletop game show.
Okay.
So he has a show, tabletop, where he has celebrities come and they play board games and stuff. So he decided to do one about tabletop RPGs, and he worked with... forget the name of the company, but they're the people that made the tabletop Dragon Age game, which the video games are like in the books and stuff are based off of. And they designed a whole new system for this show for him. So it's like a brand new game. This is the first time they're playing it. And it's just him. It's Hank Green, who is John Green, part of the Vlogbrothers.
Okay. John Green, author of Fault in Our Stars.
Fault in Our Stars, yeah. He has a YouTube channel
with his
brother, Hank Green. So it's Hank, Allison Hayslip, who is a former G4 host and internet
person. Yeah, I remember her, actually,
yeah. Yuri Lowenthal, who's a voice actor, and Lauren Bailey, who's also a voice actor. Or Laura Bailey. Yeah, Laura Bailey, who's a voice actor.
Okay.
So they're the cast, and he's the dungeon master or game master. And it's just keep them playing this new game that Will Wheaton wrote. So, I don't know. It's a lot of fun. They have one episode up so far, premiered last week. So I think people should check it out.
Cool. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. It sounds very nerdy.
Yeah, and it's like this weird... the world is like this science fiction, like magic science thing. So, like this alchemy kind of thing. I don't know. It's really weird, and I think it's pretty unique. So, it's cool.
All right, so that is... What was the name of that again?
Titan's Grave, Ashes of Volcana.
Okay, so that is Titan's Grave, Ashes of Volcana. And where can people watch that?
The episodes go up Tuesdays on geekandsundry.com /shows/ Titan's Grave, or Fridays on their Geek and Sundry's YouTube channel.
All right, so you can check that out. My discussions. I have two movies I wanted to talk about. Actually, I saw a lot of stuff this past 2 weeks, and it was tough to narrow them down. But I just wanted to talk about two. The first of which was Tomorrowland, and that's the new movie directed by Brad Bird, written by Damon Lindelof, and starring George Clooney. And now, I love Brad Bird. You know, he's one of my favorite filmmakers working today. He directed The Iron Giant, The Incredibles, Mission Impossible 4, Ratatouille. Like, he's awesome. Damon Lindelof, I have mixed feelings about. However, he is the showrunner of The Leftovers, and I love that show.
So, yeah, that was an amazing show.
Yeah, so that's a great show, and George Clooney is awesome.
Yeah, so in theory, this should be really good.
Right. And I was really looking forward to Tomorrowland for a really long time, because I thought it looked really good, and then as it was coming out, the reviews for the movie were less than enthusiastic.
Okay.
So that kind of dampened my enthusiasm a little bit. But I have to say, Tomorrowland I think is pretty good.
Okay. I'm surprised.
I was pleasantly engaged by this movie. The movie has problems, specifically towards the end. The last half hour of the movie is kind of like, a lot of the movie is spent with the girl, George Clooney, and another girl trying to get to Tomorrowland.
Okay.
And I think that's really interesting and a lot of fun. Once they get to Tomorrowland, for the last half hour or so of the movie, I think it's still interesting, but I think it's where the movie encounters a lot of its problems. There's such like a gee whiz, like enthusiastic... there's such an enthusiastic spirit to this movie that I found very refreshing.
Right.
You know, it's sort of about this dystopian future, but it's not like Mad Max, where where everything's like hell and...
Where everything's on fire.
Yeah, everything's the worst possible version of it could possibly be. This is like a dystopian future, but there's hope to change it and, like, you know, possibly prevent it.
Right.
I think it's a good... Like, it's basically a kid's movie. That works well for adults as well. I would say it's a really good gateway sci-fi movie for kids. Okay.
That's an interesting way to look at it, but I like it.
If I was 8 years old watching Tomorrowland, I would watch it like 50 times. Like, it's the kind of movie that I would have just watched over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, I think it has a very fun spirit. It felt like some of Joe Johnston's work, like The Rocketeer.
Okay. Yep.
That
makes sense.
Yeah. So, to that end, I really enjoyed Tomorrowland. It's a fun thrill ride for the first, like, hour and 20 minutes. And once they get to Tomorrowland, it kind of falters. There's a lot of issues, specifically thematically, towards the end, which I had a lot of problems with. But, overall, I think it's a really solid time.
Okay.
And the other movie I wanted to discuss is a movie called Spy, which was directed by Paul Feig and starring Melissa McCarthy. Paul Feig is director of Bridesmaids and The Heat. He also created Freaks and Geeks, one of my favorite shows of all time. And he will be directing the upcoming Ghostbusters reboot.
The all-female one or the other one?
The all-female one.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the other one just exists as an idea right now, I think.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Like, there's no definite stuff going on there. But he's directing the all-female one. Now, Melissa McCarthy is the star of this movie, and generally... I prefer Melissa McCarthy in supporting roles, but she's really good here as the lead. I think one of the things that surprised me about this movie, I was going in expecting McCarthy to just do a bunch of pratfalls and kind of be terrible at being a spy, but that's not the case. Her character is actually super competent.
Wow, that's interesting.
She's actually really good at her job, and so you want to see her succeed, as the movie goes on. Like, it works really well. But it's also really funny. Jason Statham plays a supporting role in this movie, and he is amazing. He is ridiculously funny.
Isn't he, like, kind of playing himself in a weird way?
Sort of. He's definitely lampooning his persona in a lot of ways. There's several scenes of him listing ridiculous scenarios that he has been a part of as a spy, and I would watch an entire movie of him just listing those scenarios.
That's awesome.
There's like bits where he's like, "You see this arm over here? This arm has come off of my body, and I had to reattach it with this arm."
That's amazing. I would watch that.
Yes. So it's definitely it's a lot of fun. Rose Byrne is great in this movie. Peter Serafinowicz is really funny in this movie. Bobby Cannavale, Allison Janney, all of them get a lot of good laughs. It makes me pretty optimistic about the new Ghostbusters movie.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, I was already looking forward to it because it sounded fun and different enough. And Paul Feig, I enjoy. You know, I liked Bridesmaids. He created Freaks and Geeks, so, you know, looking
so
forward to it.
So you're in.
Yeah, I'm basically in for the new Ghostbusters. Did you hear Chris Hemsworth is going to be...
Is the receptionist?
Is the receptionist.
Amazing.
I love that. Like, they had... Yes. Like, they have the all-female Ghostbusters, and then they get one of the Avengers to be...
Yeah, one of the hunkiest leading men right now.
Yeah.
He's going to be the secretary.
Yes.
Yes.
And also, one more odd thing about Spy. I was watching Spy and thinking, there's a weird amount of James Bond homages this year. Like, homages to, like, classic James Bond movies. Spy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Spy is definitely in that mold. Kingsman... Mm-hmm.
Right.
Was absolutely in that mold. Man from U.N.C.L.E. looks like it's going to be in the same thing.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, we're going to have a James Bond movie this year, and it's probably not going to be like a classic James Bond movie.
It's going to be the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm down.
Yeah. So, that's Spy, and that is Tomorrowland, both of which are in theaters now. So, Mike, I think we can move on. So, guys, hold on to your butts. Because it's time for our feature review of Jurassic World.
Nice.
It's not about control.
Stand down.
It's a relationship. Based on respect. These animals are thinking, I gotta eat. I'm gonna hunt. You gotta be able to relate to at least one of those things.
Every time we've unveiled a new attraction, attendance has spiked.
That was awesome.
Corporate felt genetic modification would up the wow factor.
They're dinosaurs, wow enough.
She was designed to be bigger than the T-Rex.
What happened to the sibling?
She ate it. We have an asset out of containment. What is that?
Her tracking implant. She clawed it out.
How would it know to do that?
She remembered where they put it in.
Oh, God.
That was from the trailer for Jurassic World. It's the newest film from director Colin Trevorrow, written by Colin Trevorrow, Rick Jaffa, Amanda Silver, and Derek Connolly. The movie stars Chris Pratt, Bryce Dallas Howard, Vincent D'Onofrio, Ty Simpkins, Nick Robinson, Omar Sy, B.D. Wong, Jake Johnson, and Lauren Lapkus. Jurassic World takes place 22 years after the events of Jurassic Park. A fully functional dinosaur theme park now exists on Isla Nublar called Jurassic World. But dinosaurs aren't cool anymore, Mike. So we need something bigger and scarier. So the dino scientists splice together a super dino that breaks out and wreaks havoc on the park. Obviously, things go to shit pretty quickly. Now, I think before we get into our review of Jurassic World, we should discuss maybe how we come to the Jurassic Park franchise, what our relationship is with those movies. So, Mike, why don't you start off? What do you think of Jurassics 1 through 3?
Jurassic Park is a foundational film for me.
Yeah.
I remember being like 5 or 6 going to my babysitter's house and watching it. They had that, Jurassic Park, and Terminator 2 on VHS. And we would just watch those over and over and over and over again. So though that, you know, so Jurassic Park is one of those movies for me that I've been watching as long as I can remember things.
Right.
And The Lost World is the first PG-13 movie I ever saw in theaters.
Really?
So that, yeah, so there's a lot of nostalgia for me in this franchise. I mean, Jurassic Park 3, whatever, that movie happened. So I'm one of the few people in the world that actually enjoys The Lost World. So that's what I was bringing into Jurassic World.
Okay. And yeah, as for me, Jurassic Park, the original, is, again, it's like you, one of those movies that I've watched since before I can remember watching it for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, that's just always been... That movie's always been a part of my life. So, I love Jurassic Park. The Lost World, is terrible and you're wrong for liking it.
Yeah, exactly. I accept that. It's a pure nostalgia movie for me.
And Jurassic Park 3, I think, is not great, but, like, I think for what it does, it's totally acceptable.
Yeah, I agree.
To the point where I think it's better than The Lost World, but...
Don't get crazy.
But, yeah, it's like a 90-minute movie. You get into the dinosaur island, you get out. It's like a solid B movie with some profoundly silly moments that I really enjoy.
Yes.
So, that's basically where I'm coming from as well. So, Mike, that all said, Jurassic World, it's been 14 years since Jurassic Park 3, 22 yeah. years since the original Jurassic Park. What was your take on Jurassic World?
I wish this movie was never made.
Wow. Okay, that's harsh.
Yeah. I came in, I had such high expectations. Well, I mean, I knew it wasn't going to be great, because that first teaser trailer with, you know, the very first one was amazing, and I was like, yes, I'm on board this hype train. Mm. And then every subsequent trailer that came out, I was like, this movie's going to suck. But it doesn't deliver on any, like, the whole thing for Jurassic Park for me now is that it is a consumer film. It's a big, you know, big budget box office, you know, blockbuster thing.
Right.
But it also has this, like, anti-corporation bent to it.
Sure.
And, like, that whole scene with the, you know, before you knew it, you slapped it on a lunchbox and you sold it. That whole thing is wrong. And Jurassic World is about, it doesn't attempt to do any of that, I don't think.
Really? That's interesting. I actually felt the opposite. So I'm going to discuss that in a little bit.
But, okay.
So my overall review of Jurassic World, Mike, after yes. careful consideration, I've decided not to endorse your park.
Oh my God.
Boom.
Nice.
I actually did not hate Jurassic World. I came into it hearing not great things.
Yeah.
And I actually had fun while I was watching it. Like, okay. I thought I was watching it and thinking, like, yeah, this is all right. Like, this is perfectly fine. And then as it was over, I thought, yeah, that was fun. All right. And then, like, you know, I just keep thinking about certain stuff that happened in the movie that, like, didn't work for me or bothered me.
Yeah.
But I still think that it's a totally acceptable sequel to Jurassic Park, in as much as there can be a sequel to Jurassic Park.
That's
the thing. Jurassic Park is a movie that does not lend itself to franchising very well.
Right. It was before that was standard in blockbusters.
Yeah, and it's weird, because, like, Jurassic Park happened. Like, yeah. They brought the scientists in. Dinosaurs got loose. 8 people. Scientists left.
Right.
Hammond decides not to make the park.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He says that. Alan Grant says, I've decided not to endorse your park. And John Hammond says, so have I. And they leave.
Right.
And Lost World is Jeff Goldblum coming back to the island.
Yeah.
And then Jurassic Park 3 is Alan Grant coming back to the island.
Right.
And then Jurassic World, the park is open for some reason.
Yeah, that happened.
So it's weird. It seems like Colin Trevorrow has said this movie basically ignores Lost World and Jurassic Park 3 as even existing.
Right.
And I guess it would have to, because at the end of Lost World, a T-Rex gets loose in San Francisco.
San Diego. But still.
And after something like that happens, I don't think the government would allow them to open up.
Yeah, or, like, to allow Engine to exist anymore.
Yeah, like, it would not, it, like, there would be so much overhead, like.
Yeah, it's not possible.
But anyway, this movie tries to have, like, a meta-commentary about its very existence, which is why I kind of disagree with your interpretation of it being a corporate thing.
Okay.
But I also kind of agree with you.
It should have been called Mercedes World. There's so much product placement in this movie.
Right. The thing is,
which
I feel like...
bothered me.
I feel like that product placement is intentional, because it's trying to emphasize the fact that this has become a very corporate environment.
True.
It's weird, because this movie is about its very existence as a soulless Hollywood blockbuster.
Okay.
And to that end, it's sort of successful, But it also emphasizes the fact that this is a soulless Hollywood blockbuster.
Yeah, just because it's aware of the fact that it's bad doesn't make it good.
Yeah, it's weird. There's a scene early on in the movie where Jake Johnson's character is wearing a t-shirt that has the original Jurassic Park logo on it.
Yeah.
And Bryce Dallas Howard says, take that off, that's in bad taste. And he was like, no, that first park was legit, though. Like, yeah. That was the real deal, man. It wasn't like this, you know, corporate fascism or whatever. Yeah. This is that was like, you know, solely for science and everything. And it's as if it's saying, like, that movie was legit.
Yeah, and then like we get another hour and a half of this bad one. Like, I would have rather watched the 12-minute supercut on YouTube of the Jurassic Park references in this movie than the entire movie.
There are a lot, too.
And it's awesome. Those are great.
Yeah, they're cool in the sense that, hey, it's Jurassic Park. But it's also like, man, I could be watching Jurassic Park.
That's what I mean, exactly.
There's a lot of callbacks to the original film here. Specifically, there's a lot of visual callbacks, like mirroring of certain shots. Like, there's a shot of a car mirror with a dinosaur running in the background. There's a shot of Bryce Dallas Howard's character, Claire, holding up a flare in the same way that Jeff Goldblum does. There's a shot, I don't know the type of dinosaur, but it's like the gazelle-type dinosaurs that are like, you know,
they're flocking this way.
Yeah, they're flocking this way.
And Gallimimus, don't you remember?
Okay.
I may have just rewatched Jurassic Park. Don't worry.
So did I. Actually, I just don't. I watched it a couple nights ago.
All right, fair enough.
But I did not remember the name of that. I did not remember the name. So good job. But yeah, the flocking this way scene, and there's a mirror of that with the kids in the future ball.
Yeah.
Like
going future ball.
Yeah. What was with that?
I don't know.
Such an oddly designed contraption.
And I hate that Jimmy Fallon is the one who has to give us the exposition to explain it.
They spared no expense.
Spared no expense. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and in any case, but as I've said before, like the movie is a commentary about like its existence as a Hollywood blockbuster, and it criticizes its audience who want like bigger and faster and more teeth.
Right.
More teeth is what Bryce Dallas Howard says.
Wow, enough.
Wow.
They're dinosaurs. Wow, enough.
Yeah. And so that's the sentiment that I kind of agree with. That's the thing. I think this entire premise of this movie is broken.
Yes.
Because why would people get bored of dinosaurs?
Right.
Like this.
I mean, I guess that's the whole thing, though.
Well, this is the only place in the world that has living, breathing dinosaurs.
How are they not jam-packed all the time?
Yeah. Like this is like this has to be like bigger than Disney World, bigger than like. You know, anything. It's,
yeah.
I don't understand why people wouldn't just come and to see the dinosaurs.
They could charge $10,000 a night, like the lawyer says in Jurassic Park.
And people would pay it.
Yeah, exactly. They could have a coupon night. but I think the where this movie fails is that it's not earnest in its critique. It's like we pointed out, it's like, oh, you guys are so dumb for wanting big dinosaurs. And then it just makes a really dumb movie.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think there's a really clever version of this movie hidden somewhere in there. I think
yes.
It might have actually been, like, an original draft or something. Because there are elements that, like, actually call to mind certain, like, action movie tropes.
I even just realized that they referenced the failed Jurassic Park 4, where they were going to make the dinosaur-human hybrid army.
Yes.
And the fact that he wants the raptors, well, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually, like, part of the script.
Yeah, that's still there.
Yeah, there's still room for Jurassic Park 5.
Oh, God.
Which we're absolutely going to get now.
It's going to happen, yeah, I know.
This movie made, like, all the money in the world.
I hope nobody goes to see it ever again and it only makes this money from this weekend.
That would still, like, it would still make
it. It would still get a sequel.
It would still warrant a sequel. That's like...
I know.
But, like, I was actually shocked at how much money this movie made.
Yeah.
Like, I was not... I did not anticipate how many people were itching for a new Jurassic Park movie. And I should have realized, because we're in our, like, early 20s.
Yeah.
So Jurassic Park's a formative movie for us, and it's also a formative movie for almost everybody else that's in their early 20s. And being in our early 20s, we have friends with many people who are in their early 20s.
Yes, typically.
Who are not really film geeks, but, like... I guess have some kind of connection to Jurassic Park, because on Facebook, like the day before it came out, I saw a lot of statuses that were saying, like, I've waited 22 years to see this movie.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. I mean, and so such enthusiasm.
Jurassic Park isn't, I mean, it's a big blockbuster. It's not a film geek thing. So everyone wants to see it. And it is a really awesome blockbuster. So I understand the enthusiasm.
I was like, I kept seeing status. It's like, I've waited 22 years to see this movie. I'm so excited. And I'm like, you haven't waited 22 years to see this movie.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park 3 came out.
Yeah, exactly.
In 2001.
You're only 22. Like, how is that?
If anything, you've waited 14 years since Jurassic Park 3 to see this movie. But you've had Jurassic Park movies since the original to tide you over.
Right.
They haven't been good, but they...
But they've existed.
Yeah. One really interesting thing I did think about this movie that I thought was a really interesting metaphor. The Mosasaurus, which was that giant whale-like dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
There's an early scene in the movie where it's being fed a great white shark.
Yep.
And in keeping with this movie being a commentary on its own existence as a modern blockbuster, this scene to me read as if it was the modern blockbuster, being the Mosasaurus, eating the original blockbuster.
The first blockbuster.
Which was Jaws.
Yep.
And to that, I think that's actually a pretty good way to do it. And I think if there were more scenes like that,
that's what I was going to say.
That would be cool. Like, I'd be much more on board with Jurassic World. And that said, I feel like I'm trashing this movie a lot. I did ultimately enjoy watching it, so...
Okay. I don't know. Like I said, there's no earnestness, and it feels like George Lucas must have ghostwritten this dialogue, because it's some of the most dull, inane dialogue I've seen in a movie in a long time. It's just like one emotion throughout the whole movie from these actors. And the actors are so much better than the script allows them to be.
Yeah.
And it's really disappointing.
Yeah, there is the script itself is pretty weak. That said, it's not like the script of the original Jurassic Park has the best dialogue either.
Not
even that the dialogue's bad, just that the characters in that movie are very thin. However,
yeah.
The actors in that movie really make those characters their own and really run with what they're given. In this movie, Chris Pratt is fine, with a character that doesn't get much to do outside of being the kind of cool action hero.
He's white guy who knows wilderness in cargo shorts.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's his whole character.
Yeah, and Bryce Dallas Howard essentially goes from uptight to less uptight, and that's her character arc.
Yeah. Yep. Still got the heels on though.
Yeah, throughout the entire movie. Which is ridiculous. So she does her best with the character, but there's not really much to work with. And there's, zero chemistry between Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard. There's nothing.
Ever, yeah.
And it's weird because the movie, tries to build a relationship for them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work at all. There's...
not even close.
Yeah. Also, I dream of one day having a Jurassic Park movie that does not feature any annoying kids.
Oh, man, if only.
And the thing is, the kids in the first movie, they're kind of annoying, but they're not, they kind of serve a function.
But they're useful.
They're useful. In the first movie, Lexi's hacking skills are a major plot point at the end, which is ridiculous in and of itself, but...
But she did something, what counts.
And also, the kids in the first film serve a function in that it's supposed to teach Alan Grant how to take care of kids.
Right.
And, in a survival situation, but still.
But it still humanizes him.
Yeah, they serve as a function to humanize Alan Grant. Here, the kids are Bryce Dallas Howard's nephews.
Yep.
She sees them at the beginning of the movie.
And at the end.
And at the end of the movie. But they're mostly just dino fodder, I guess.
Yeah, they're a plot point.
They're a plot point. They never contribute anything to the movie themselves, except for this weird divorce subplot that never works.
Yeah.
Their parents are getting divorced, and we're supposed to be invested in that, I guess.
Because, which is sad.
Because
they
mention it in, two scenes.
Yeah. Because a young boy cries, we're supposed to feel bad.
Exactly, yeah. The extent of the kid's characterization is that the young kid likes dinosaurs, which, to be fair, is... the extent of Timmy's characterization in the first movie.
True.
What?
Said, yeah, true.
Okay. And the older kid is just an asshole. That's kind of his thing.
Yep.
He has a girlfriend that he doesn't like, and he's
Yeah, and he's like trying to mack it with all the other girls.
Yeah, not even trying to mack it. He's just staring at them from from
which
across,
is creepy,
which is super creepy. But I think the thing that really bugged me about this movie, the original film, the reason the original film is great is because it has like that Spielbergian sense of wonder.
Yes,
like that movie understands that dinosaurs, like that movie understands how you would feel if you saw dinosaurs for the first time in your life after previously knowing that they were extinct.
Right.
And this movie, I think, undercuts that wonder. And I think it's sort of intentional, but I think that's not the way to go.
Yeah, it's not enough.
Yeah, that's the thing. When in the original movie, when you hear the Jurassic Park, the iconic Jurassic Park theme for the first time, mm-hmm. right, the music starts to swell, Alan Grant and Ellie Sattler like look up, and they see like the giant herd of brontosauruses.
Yeah.
And it's like this magical moment that like really captures like the entire sense of wonder. In this movie, it's the opening scenes, you start hearing that iconic Jurassic Park theme again.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the younger kid, Ty Simpkins, run to the front of the train, and the camera starts to pan up, and instead of the herd of brontosauruses or anything kind of magical like that, you just see the theme park.
Yeah. The door opens to Jurassic World.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And I think that's like, I think that's the idea, is that you're supposed to feel like that wasn't as magical as I was expecting it to be based on the music.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's that in that moment the audience is given the you know, we're supposed to be excited by corporate things now rather than actual one like wonderful things.
Exactly, yeah.
But I'm going to refuse to give this movie any credit because it sucks.
Well, that's I feel like the better way to go about this would be, I think that's actually a fairly smart moment to have the theme park there instead of the dinosaurs to make that point. Like, this is just a corporate sellout theme park now.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's no wonder in this movie at all.
Right.
Which is sort of the point of Jurassic Park. And so, in the original movie, and I don't want to keep comparing it to the original Jurassic Park because, like...
But we're gonna.
But... Like, nothing can... I wouldn't compare it to the original Jurassic Park so much if the movie itself didn't compare itself to the original Jurassic Park so much.
Correct.
In that original movie, like, there's a sense of wonder that leads into, like, the dinosaurs attacking and everybody going to hell.
Yeah.
But there's still that sense of wonder even when the dinosaurs are attacking.
Yes.
Like, that amazing shot at the end where the T-Rex roars and the banner falls down when dinosaurs ruled the Earth. That's, like... You know, that emphasizes how amazing and powerful these creatures are.
Right.
And there's nothing like that in Jurassic World.
They burn that banner in this movie.
That's spoiler.
Okay.
Which
But either way.
But, like...
We're robbed of that in this movie.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I think the way to do it would be, like, really emphasize how corporate and, like, soulless this enterprise has gotten... And then find a way to work that wonder in there somehow.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, after everything's gone to hell, find a way for people to be, like, impressed and, like, amazed by dinosaurs again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not what this movie does.
No. No.
So, but I think we have a lot to talk about in spoilers, Mike.
I guess, yeah, I jumped the gun a little bit. But...
A little bit. So we will get to that, and we will get to many more things in our spoiler section for Jurassic World.
You didn't say the magic word. You didn't say the magic word. You didn't say the magic word.
All right, Mike, now before we get into spoilers, I would like to send a message to Colin Trevorrow here, if you would indulge me for a second.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Trevorrow, if I may, I'll tell you the problem with the filmmaking power that you're using here. It didn't require any discipline to attain it. You know, you saw the movies that others had done, and you took the next step. You didn't make those movies for yourself, so you don't take any responsibility for it. You stood on the shoulders of geniuses to accomplish something as fast as you could, and before you even knew what you had, you patented it and you packaged it and you slapped it on a plastic lunchbox, and now you're selling it. You're selling it. Boom.
Yeah, after all this, the only one on my side is the blood-sucking lawyer. Wow, that was awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
But right. Yeah, there's none of that in this movie. None of that critique is in this movie,
yeah,
I don't think.
None of that is as sharp as that one scene. Like, this movie really needed a Jeff Goldblum character.
It did. They had respect for the power, and that power's out now.
Exactly, yeah. It's weird. This is a movie that's, like, at war with its own existence. Like,
yeah.
In a weird
way. Almost doesn't want it to be made.
Yeah. But it's here.
But it's here.
It exists.
And it made more money than any movie ever, so. In opening weekend, at least.
Biggest opening weekend ever. Like, who knows how it will do for the rest of its run, but it seems like it's going to make all the money. I guess, like... I was so, like, blown... Like, I was saying before how blown away I was by how much money this movie made. Nostalgia, I guess, is a much more powerful box office draw.
Apparently.
Than anybody ever thought. Imagine how big Star Wars is going to be.
Oh, my God. Holy crap.
You're right. This is a fourth Jurassic Park movie that nobody asked for. Imagine how big Star Wars Episode 7 featuring Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford is going to be.
And now we're getting a Star Wars movie that everyone asked for.
Yeah. So I did want to talk about one scene in Jurassic World that really bothered me.
Okay.
And that was Claire's assistant's death scene.
Yeah, yes.
So basically Claire, Bryce Dallas Howard's character, has an assistant who she assigns to watch the kids during the day. And the kids ditch her because she's kind of lame. She's on her phone all the time. So basically, Claire's assistant is a little too busy with the job to focus on watching the kids, which isn't necessarily that bad of a thing, because, you know, she was just assigned to this job by her boss. Like, that's not like, you know, it's not that big of a deal. She didn't want to do it, but she did it, and she was watching the kids, and the kids ditched her. And then she spent time trying to find the kids. She was like, you didn't see her after that until Claire called her, and Claire was like, I've been looking everywhere for the kids. I can't find her. And then she's like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And then later, Claire's assistant, who was spending all her time with these kids and then looking for the kids, gets picked up by a pterodactyl or whatever, and then tossed into another pterodactyl. And they play like hacky sack with her for a little bit. And then the pterodactyl lands in the Mosasaurus tank, and the Mosasaurus eats her and the pterodactyl together.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that happened.
She had to die, though, apparently.
That was such an unnecessarily cruel death scene. Like, this movie treats Claire's assistant, who was kind of annoyed at the kids, which is why I guess she's a bad person. It treats her like the lawyer from the first movie. It treats her like we're supposed to, like, be really happy that she's dead.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't realize that.
You know, like, when the lawyer dies in the first movie, he spent the entire movie being an asshole and being a corporate shill.
Yeah.
And so when he dies in a really embarrassing way, like, it's really funny.
Yeah.
And here, like, she just gets, like, torn apart. Like, I don't know why.
Yeah. For some reason, she just had to die.
So
we're not supposed to like her because we're supposed to like the kids for some reason. So
yeah, exactly. I sympathize with her much more than I sympathize with those kids.
Yeah.
Other spoilers. You mentioned that the kids burned the When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth banner, and that's in the scene where they actually discover the visitor center from the first movie, and they are walking around it and they see like all this stuff from the first movie. Like, oh yeah, cool.
The night vision goggles.
Night vision goggles. They get into the Jeep from the first movie.
Yeah.
And then they take the When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth banner and burn it as, like, a torch. And it's like, hey, and it's as if Colin Trevorrow is saying, like, hey, here's your childhood. Watch it burn.
Yeah, basically. And, like, I don't understand. I mean, granted, the first movie, Jurassic Park, does have a lot of major plot holes.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
I'll grant it that. But this one, like, how does B.D. Wong still have a job? Like, how does that character... And why is he evil now?
Yeah, no, I was...
Doesn't make any sense.
First of all, B.D. Wong has, like, one scene in the original Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
And now he's, like, a relatively prominent supporting character in this movie. I was so... Like, he has, like, this really long monologue about, like, geneticism and stuff early on. And I was like, wow, this is more than he spoke in the first movie.
Yeah, basically.
But yeah, he works for InGen, and he's like he
He's at the Newman.
End of the, yeah, he's Newman. He's at the end of the movie. He steals like all of the embryos and like takes them somewhere else, presumably for a setup for Jurassic Park 5, I would imagine.
Yeah.
To give them something to do in Jurassic Park 5. Because the thing is, there's no way the park can exist anymore.
Right.
Jurassic Park 5 cannot have, like, Jurassic Worlds as a functioning area anymore. Right. And, like, what would be the point of that? Like, by the end of this movie, like, people have been eaten by dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, like, scientists checking out the park. It was, like, civilians who
actual
were just
tourists.
There.
Yeah.
I have no idea where a sequel could go from here. Like, I'm actually, like, genuinely curious what they do.
Yeah, although, I mean, the Barbasol can from the first one is a red herring. Nothing comes of that. So.
That's true. I've actually heard some theories about that being part of Jurassic Park 5.
Oh, like, we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah. Actually, my dream Jurassic Park 5, I saw somebody pose... I'm combining a couple different ideas that I saw on Twitter.
Okay.
Right here. But here's my dream Jurassic Park 5. So you have Chris Pratt, and somebody comes up to him and says, like, somebody who works for, like, this company that's trying to defeat InGen or something.
Yeah.
And the only way to do that is to get the Barbasol can. Right? So somebody comes up to Chris Pratt and says, like, we need you to get this Barbasol can from... retrieve it from the island, and we're putting together a team for you. And then just do it like Fast Five.
Oh, my God.
Where you bring back all of the cast members from previous movies who have had experience on Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
So have Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard.
Okay. Right?
And then you have Sam Neill, Laura Dern, and Jeff Goldblum.
Yep.
And then Julianne Moore and Vince Vaughn.
Yep.
And then Trevor Morgan, who played the kid who survived on the island for 8 weeks in Jurassic Park 3.
I would watch the shit out of that movie.
And then have it be like a heist where they're trying to get the Barbasol can from the T-Rex who is guarding it.
Yeah. Can we talk about the T-Rex in this movie?
We should absolutely talk about the T-Rex in this movie because it plays a huge role at the end of the movie.
Once again.
Yes. As it seems like by the end they realize who the real star of the Jurassic Park movies is. And
yeah,
it's the T-Rex.
And it's T-Rex.
It's
the motherfucking T-Rex.
It's the fucking T-Rex. And I was a little conflicted about the T-Rex, because on the one hand, it was great to see it again.
Yeah.
Because the T-Rex is, like, the best scene in the original Jurassic Park is the T-Rex attacking the Jeep scene. Like, that's, you know, it unquestionably awesome. And it was great to see the T-Rex again. However, I think the way it happened felt very fan service-y.
Yeah.
And
the
thing is...
flare.
Yeah, and the flare and everything like that. The thing is, he never looks as cool as he does in the original movie.
Because he's all CGI.
Because he's all CGI.
Yes.
Like, the T-Rex in that scene in the original Jurassic Park, and there is a CGI T-Rex in there too.
Yeah.
But the iconic T-Rex scene in Jurassic Park, that's an animatronic T-Rex. And it looks amazing. Like, that's still one of the coolest effects of all time. And
it's a real T-Rex, and there's a sense of wonder and awe, and in this, we just get the factory-made one.
Yeah, the CGI T-Rex. And the thing is, I think there is actually one scene that has an animatronic dinosaur in it in Jurassic World, which is the scene where Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard find, like, an injured brontosaurus.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that was an animatronic.
Yeah,
and it looked pretty. And it looked pretty good.
Yeah, like, it was awesome. That's what Jurassic Park is supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, like... the original movie combined animatronics and CGI, but when it used the animatronics, like, it was, like, it just looks so good.
Yeah. I mean, in the end fight with the T-Rex and the Indominus Rex and the Velociraptor sidekick, I think Deep Blue Sea had a better surprise monster jumps out of the water and kills a main character moment than this. It was so obvious. As soon as it backed up against the water, I was like, oh, the thing's going to happen. And then it happened.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think that that final battle, I thought, was pretty fun.
Yeah, it was cool.
Like, you know, just seeing these dinosaurs go at each other. But it essentially made the point, like, okay, the humans are pretty much pointless now. We just put them to the side. And just have it Indominus Rex versus Velociraptor versus T-Rex.
They took shelter in the gift shop.
Yeah.
That's all humanity is, man.
Yes.
Oh, wait, no, I can't give this movie credit. You're right. No, it's dumb.
Let's talk about the Indominus Rex a little bit, because the Indominus Rex is pretty much the dinosaur who can just do whatever. Like,
yeah, like, I don't...
It seemed like every 10 minutes they were discovering a new power that the Indominus Rex had.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool, but where was all this genetic knowledge in the first one, where they didn't know that frogs could change sex? But in this one, they know everything.
They've had 22 years to figure that out.
Yeah, you're right.
But, like, the Indominus Rex can camouflage.
Yeah. Which can hide its heat signature somehow.
Can hide its heat signature. It can remember where humans put a tracking device on it and dig it out.
Yeah.
Of its skin. And it can also speak to velociraptors.
Yeah,
and have a conversation with them. There's actually, have you ever seen the TV show The Critic?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, that was an animated show in the 90s, and there's a lot of parts in this movie that remind me of a sketch in that show, which was, they did like a Jurassic Park 2 sketch.
Okay.
Where, the little girl, traps a velociraptor in a closet and locks it, and Jeff Goldblum goes, you can't hold a raptor in a closet, they're too smart. And like, there's a key in the lock, and so the velociraptor tries to open it and can't open it, and so he, like, pushes a newspaper under the door, like, jams the door, has the key fall out, pulls the newspaper back in, and unlocks the door, and then it, like, bursts out.
Yeah.
And John Hammond says, "You may beat us, but you'll never escape the island." And then the velociraptor pulls out a pipe and says, "Oh, I beg to differ. You see, the other raptors and I have constructed a crude suspension bridge."
That's
what this dinosaur does, like, throughout the entire movie. Like, I would not be surprised if he just started talking and, like, had conversations with Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
You know?
It's bizarre.
It is. Now, I did say that this movie had some, like, interesting subversive tropes, action movie tropes. And particularly what I was thinking of... So, throughout the movie, Jake Johnson and Lauren Lapkus are, like, the two lab technicians.
Yes. Right? I want their movie. Fuck the rest of this movie.
They were great. Those are both really funny actors, and it was cool seeing them in this big blockbuster movie. But there's this really funny bit towards the end where, they're all evacuating. Jake Johnson decides to stay, and Lauren Lapkus leaves. And Jake Johnson is, like, acting the hero and then goes in for a kiss with Lauren Lapkus. And she's like, "Oh, no, I have a boyfriend." and he's like, "What? Like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Whatever."
You just never talk about it.
Yeah, like, well, we're at work, so. And I thought that was really funny and a really entertaining subversion of, like, an action movie trope, where like the hero will go in for the kiss, like, with the girl. But then the movie goes ahead and does the same trope.
Yeah, and then it just falls
with
apart.
Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, and it's like, well, what was the point? Like.
Yes, like, that's what I mean.
Like, you just subverted this. Why are you doing this now? Yeah. Like, you don't have to do this.
It's not as smart as it tries to be, or, like, it has very smart moments and then undoes them.
Yeah, I think there was a much smarter version of this movie that may have been, like, rewritten into, like, a dumber version of this movie.
And then the dirty corporations got their hands on it.
Yeah, and then the corporations got their hands on it, so what can you do? And
can we talk about the mildly racist scene where BD Wong and the guy who's the new head of Injin shows up, and it's an Asian character and an Indian or Asian actor and an Indian actor sit down together for, like, it's a deep philosophical conversation, and they pour themselves tea. That's mildly racist.
Is it? Like,
I think so.
Okay, Mike.
Don't worry about it.
All right, I won't. I did think that this movie was surprisingly... I think there was some very intense scenes, like some suspenseful stuff. Particularly, I thought the scene where the two kids were in the future ball and the Indominus finds them, I thought was pretty effective.
Yeah.
Where the kids, like, do the Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid thing where they jump off the... where they jump into the water.
Yep.
You know, I thought that was pretty good, and there is some pretty good scenes. I liked, there was a scene where Chris Pratt rides the velociraptors, and they, like, go out and find the Indominus, and then it turns out the Indominus can talk to the Velociraptors, and they turn on Chris Pratt, and he's like, oh, crap.
Yeah. Like, that was cool, but, like, it's just undone by how poorly written the script, the dialogue is. No wonder they wouldn't tell us what it is. It's part raptor. And then they turn, like, that's how, like, what the fuck? I don't know. And there were, like, I think this movie also has cemented me that I will join your Battle of the Unsullied and stop watching trailers.
Yeah.
Because every big moment, like, that was supposed to be shocking is in the trailer.
Like, okay.
When the helicopter crashes through the aviary, or when he rides the motorcycle with the raptors. Like, yeah. It's like all this big stuff that would have been awesome, but it's exactly as it is in the trailer.
Let's talk about Irfan Khan's character, now you mentioned the helicopter, because he's supposed to be like the John Hammond, like, esque yes. character. Like, he mentions that John Hammond gave him the park or something.
Yeah.
Like, I guess he's the new CEO of Jurassic World.
Right.
And he's driven by the bottom line. And then he has, like, this big heroic thing where he's like, oh, I'm going to fly the helicopter. And then he dies.
Yeah, yes.
Like, did you feel anything when he died?
No.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't really get much to do. He's basically just, like... Like, it's not yeah. like... Like, if John Hammond died, I'd be really upset. But if this guy dies, like, you know...
Whatever. I've known you for 22 minutes. Like, I don't care. And, like, that was the other thing, too, I think. Like, the corporate interest is... given an opportunity to be heroic in this with him.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he does die, and it is a sort of heroic death in some way.
Yeah.
Which I don't think the first one would have done.
Perhaps not. Perhaps
I don't know.
So, do you have anything else you wanted to talk about in spoilers, Mike?
No, that's it. I hope no one sees this.
Well, you've already lost that battle.
Yeah, I know.
And not only have people seen this, but there will absolutely be a Jurassic Park 5.
There will be another one.
I know for a fact Chris Pratt has signed on for a few more, at least.
I saw a great one, a tweet from somebody, I think you might have retweeted it, that was like, if we get to see the transformation of Chris Pratt from, like, comedic genius to bland leading man. Yeah.
I'll never forgive Hollywood. Yeah.
Yes. I agree with that.
Yeah. Have you heard the theory that's about Chris Pratt's character?
Oh, that he's the little kid from the first one?
Yeah, there's like a theory that's that he's like supposed to be the little kid that Alan Grant like terrorizes.
Yeah.
In the original movie.
It's like a 6-foot turkey vulture.
Yeah.
That kid.
Yeah. Which, like, that would probably be dumb if that was the case. But there is a scene that could potentially enforce that theory, which is that when Grant is lecturing the kid, he mentions that, he enforces on the kid that you have to respect raptors. That's
yeah.
like part of the lecture. And then there's mm-hmm. a scene Chris Pratt has where he's describing his relationship with raptors, and it's like, oh, it's based on respect.
Yeah, that's true.
So you never know. I mean...
It's possible.
I generally think that's probably not the case. Because
yeah,
I feel like
that
kid was probably scarred for life and never wanted to see a dinosaur again.
Probably hates dinosaurs.
So, that's that. So, Mike, any last thoughts on Jurassic World?
No.
Okay.
I think I've made my point clear.
You have made your point clear. You
my stance.
You actively dislike this movie.
Yes.
I thought it was fun. I mean,
it is fun, you're right. But I was so disappointed and, like, personally hurt by its letting down of what the first ones did for it overshadows it.
Yes, I thought it did some fun things and it tried to do a lot of interesting things. I don't think it succeeded very well, but I would say it's an enjoyable time at the movies, and hopefully the next one is an enjoyable time at the movies, because it's going to have to be.
Because it's going to happen, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see it in 3D or anything?
No, I saw it in 2D.
Okay. I saw it in IMAX 3D.
Really?
So I would like my $19 back, but the 3D was actually really good in this one.
Okay.
So if people are interested, if you're going to see it and you want to, considering it, I would say it's worth springing for if you're going to enjoy it.
Cool. All right, guys. So A few things. If you'd like to advertise with us or sponsor us, please email advertise@filmbook.com. You can donate and support this podcast by clicking the donate link to contribute once or the other donate link to contribute every month. Thanks to all of our donors. And any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, as we produce several different podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. So, Mike, I think in about 2 weeks, we're going to be back with Film Bookcast. I believe we'll probably review Inside Out, if that's cool with you.
Yeah.
And other than that, next week you can catch episode 2 of The Complete Works, where we will be discussing Fast Times at Ridgemont High. All right, guys, thank you guys so much for listening to the show, and we are out.